It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including special Kyrene panel to begin its work, Scout collecting bikes for his Eagle Project, Phoenix police are short over 600 officers, wood carvers practice a dying art, and remembering Tempe Elementary District's first black teacher. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Special Kyrene Panel to Begin Its Work by Paul Mariniak. The Kyrene Governing Board has impaneled 58 officials, school personnel, parents, and others for a special committee that could impact the district's future in two significant ways. Its shorter-termed assignment will involve a deep dive into the district's financial operations and challenges in order to come up with a recommendation to the board on whether it should call a special election in November on extending the district's 15% maintenance and operations budget override for another 7 years. A bit longer-termed assignment will involve proposals for addressing the increasing amount of empty space created by the continuing enrollment slide in some of the district's 25 schools. Over 100 people in the district, parents, business owners, professionals, and interested adults, applied for positions on the Kyrene Long Range Planning Committee. Superintendent Laura Tonez and her staff vetted the applicants with an eye toward not only achieving a balance of people from different backgrounds, but also people who lived or worked in the service areas for its 6 middle schools, so it could represent a geographical cross-section of the district. Letters told applicants, "This committee will demand a significant time investment, and the district is so grateful for your willingness to be part of that. Those who were turned down were told it was not a reflection of your qualifications, but limited capacity and the need to have balanced representation across all district regions. Those who were selected had to confirm their willingness to serve, especially because there's a tight time frame of what promises to be a series of long, intense meetings focusing on two issues that involve massive amounts of data. The district has set 6 monthly meetings extending to July 30th for the committee and already advised volunteers they cannot miss more than one because of the volume of material and briefings they need to take in. The committee's first monthly meeting will be at 4 p.m. on February 26th, and all sessions will be treated like governing board meetings. They will be posted in advance at kyrene.org and will be online both live and archived. The committee includes current board members Amy Satry and Vice President Trine Nelson, as well as former board members Michelle Fahey and Margaret Wright. Former State Senator Sean Bowie, a Kyrene graduate and an Ahwatukee resident, also is on the panel. Teacher Association representatives Dalia Leiding and Jennifer Belding were named, and were district administration officials Aaron Schrodner, Beth Snyder, Amy Dill, Josh Gilder, and Mason Mead. School administrators Renee Corey, Andrea Vester, Carolyn Payne, and Karina Greenwald will be on the committee, as will teaching and other school staff. Those staffers include Alexandra O'Rourke, Meg Astudio, Katie DeCerez, Chastity Ballou, Stephanie Martin, Lauren Holzer, Susan Newberry, Sharon Benocci, Chandra Spencer, Clay Lyons, and Cleavon Barnes. Parent representatives were chosen from each of the 6 middle school service areas. They include Akamel A'al parents John Shurik, Lisa Byers, Rihanna Rodriguez, and Brian Linendow. Altadena parents Daniel Skuzin, Chris Maxiden, Christina Jordan, and Kelly Kainzenapeth. Apprendi Nicholas Kovacs, Jennifer Conti, Shanisa Davis, and Rich Zotaki. Other parent representatives include Centennial parents Nicole Lance, Matt Keating, and Brendan Kelly, Kyrene Middle School parents Lindsay Palmer, Melody Parker, and Paulette Golar, and Pueblo parents Tori Gannon, Will Wallstrom, Gregory Larson, and Lauren Mandy. 2 Tempe Union administrators, Dr. Mary Keller and Dr. Mahai Ajikic, are on the committee, as well as Erica Berry from the City of Chandler and Chandler Chamber of Commerce Representative Erica Castro. Other members include Vispa Karanja, Emerson Ward, Ryan Hamilton, Carlos Valencia, and Eric Fields. The committee will act in a similar fashion to the Citizens Advisory Budget Committee that Tempe Union High School District ran during the first half of last year to come up with proposals to deal with anticipated budget shortfalls created by declining enrollment. Each of those meetings began with detailed briefings on some aspect of the district's financial and other operations. Eventually, the panel would then break into smaller groups to talk and make proposals that were then discussed by the entire 24-member committee. Ultimately, one of the biggest recommendations the Tempe Union Committee made and the board accepted was to eliminate 40 school positions and 20 district office jobs in 2025-26. While the tougher conversations for the Kyrene panel will involve vacant space, discussions of the override takes on greater urgency in light of the Trump administration's budget-cutting moves. Though many of those plans are still not disclosed, reports indicate the president wants to eliminate or significantly downsize the U.S. Department of Education, which controls a variety of funding streams that pour close to $5 million into Kyrene annually, about 14% of its annual budget. Still, the district demographers' report on Kyrene's enrollment will involve potentially significant issues about vacant space in schools and what to do with it. In a report delivered last fall by demographer Rick Bramer of Applied Economics, 8 Kyrene schools this year have enrollment below 50% capacity. Cerritos, 45%, Esperanza, 43%, Estrella, 44%, Wagoner, 49%, Kyrene Traditional Academy, 47%, Manitas Innovation Academy, 39%, Centennial Middle School, 45%, and Pueblo, 43%. 2 others are hovering at or just over half capacity, Millennio, 50%, and Niños, 53%. Other campuses are projected to lose over 100 students in the next 5 years, including Cielo, Estrella, Lagos, Mariposa, and Wagoner Elementary Schools, and 3 middle schools, Acamel, Aal, Aprendi, and Pueblo. District officials noted they have taken steps to address some empty spaces, ranging from implementing new programs to closing rooms to either attract more students or save on utility costs. Kyrene also has implemented a variety of cost-cutting measures as a result of a staggering enrollment decline of over 6,000 students from a 2001 total of 19,055 to a current of 12,849. While 5,500 of that total loss stemmed from a shrinking number of school-age children amid a rapidly declining birth rate across the country, more recent declines have been accelerated by expanding school choices and a locked housing market, characterized by prohibitive prices for young families and a reluctance of older homeowners to sell their homes, according to Bramer. The district could lose another 1,200 to 1,677 students over the next 5 years as a result of the twin pressures of unaffordable homes and low birth rates, he said. If those pressures ease, the loss would only amount to less than half that in the next 5 years, he said. School district officials have repeatedly stressed that no one is planning to close any Kyrene schools, yet that option is not off the table either. Tempe Elementary is readjusting 2 of its elementary schools' boundaries so that those campuses can be better utilized as a result of dropping enrollment. One will become a daycare facility and the other a gifted academy. In an interview last month, Tonya said she is grateful that we're able to take our time and do this right and actually seek the feedback of our community and really spend some time about what does this mean. It is not an easy discussion to have to figure out what's the right thing to do to make sure that we still keep Kyrene one of the top-performing school districts in the state, and so any decision you make is going to have an impact. Tonyez said that the committee may end up having more meetings than originally anticipated. It must make a recommendation on an override vote by early June, so the governing board can decide whether it wants to call for an election in November. That decision must be made before the current school year ends if Kyrene wants to get on the all-male November ballot. Tonya has also stressed that whether the committee recommends for addressing vacant space won't be the end of the discussions. She said administrators and likely board members would be conducting further outreach into neighborhoods around schools impacted by any major decisions on their use, if such decisions are eventually recommended. That was Special Kyrene Panel to Begin Its Work. Our next article, Scout Collecting Bikes for His Eagle Project, by AFN News staff. A Desert Vista high school junior is working to earn Scouting's highest rank by collecting bicycles to help new immigrant families that are settling in the valley. David Rosner, a 17-year-old Boy Scout for the last 9 years, is collecting bikes 8 to 11 a.m. on February 22nd at the headquarters for the nonprofit Welcome to America Project at 1711 West University Drive, Suite 158 in Tempe. The son of Brian and Allison Rosner, David belongs to Troop 280, which meets at Epiphany Lutheran Church at 800 West Ray Road in Chandler. The troop's website is troopwebhost.org/troop280chandler. My motivation to work with WTAP is to help new immigrant families get settled in America, he said. A bicycle can mean more job opportunities for a family or individual who's beginning a new life. These people are in need of help, and I'm glad to help them become more self-reliant as they build their life in this great nation of freedom. David said donors can drop off bikes during that 3-hour window or arrange to have them picked up. In the Google form, there's a link to an Amazon wish list I created for people who don't have a bike to donate, but are interested in supporting the project by purchasing helmets, bike locks, or some bike repair supplies, he added. Donated bikes can be in any condition because the other part of this Eagle project is hosting a repair night at 7 p.m. on February 27th at the WTAP headquarters. The 23-year-old nonprofit finds its origins in the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks that claimed the life of Terrence Manning. His brother wanted to create something positive out of the tragedy. The month after the attack, a photograph of a political refugee family from Afghanistan living in the valley prompted Phil and Carolyn Manning to do something, according to the Welcome to American Project website. The Mannings realized this family sought the same things they did, safety, housing, and a future for their children. They began collecting donations of household goods and clothing for the Afghan family from their friends and neighbors. They were seeking to honor Terrence's death by welcoming this family. That was Scout Collecting Bikes for His Eagle Project. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today, we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Phoenix police are short over 600 officers, by Paul Mariniak. As Phoenix's population continues to grow, the ranks of city police officers have dwindled to a level not seen since the 1990s, according to testimony last week before the City Council Public Safety and Justice Subcommittee. That disclosure during the February 5th hearing triggered emotional expressions of frustration from council members over the fact that despite aggressive recruitment campaigns by the Phoenix PD, few people want to be cops. So, per capita, the number of officers per capita for Phoenicians has plummeted since the 1990s, Councilman Tom Waring told department officials. I appreciate that you're trying to put a positive spin on things, but there is no way to tell the public that they're better off with fewer officers. I know some in this room might want to defund police. Say it all you want. There's no way to dispute that means fewer officers out patrolling our streets. Fewer officers responding to calls of guns in schools, not to mention murders, everything else, break-ins, just fewer officers respond, Waring continued. He noted, the city is 619 positions short of the 3,125 officer positions council has budgeted for. Data provided by the department showed that the current complement of about 2,500 officers is even below the 2,781 filled positions that existed in the last quarter of 2021. Moreover, Commander William Zhao said it will take over a year and a half for the department to have 2,600 positions filled, still well below the number the city has the money for right now. We could hire them because we budgeted for it, but we've made it such an unattractive job with public statements and everything else. Now, here we are, Waring said. That's really frustrating. So, for those who thought defunding police was a fantastic idea, and to the Justice Department that picked out 32 cases out of a few million human contacts over the last 8 or 9 years, well done. But as a citizen myself, and on behalf of my family, I don't appreciate it. Not even one little bit. I appreciate what you guys are doing to correct this ridiculous, self-inflicted stupidity, Waring told department leaders. Police Commander William Zhao said there are reasons to be optimistic about Phoenix Police's recruitment efforts and the current trends in officer hirings. He noted that among the 17 police academies in Arizona, an average 30% of cadets leave while Phoenix's academy has a retention rate hovering between 73% and 80%. We attribute a lot of this to the quality recruits that we're hiring, the elite-level training that they receive, and our wellness measures that are in place, Zhao said. He also noted that many cadets who drop out enter other roles in the Phoenix Police Department. For example, out of about 103 cadets in a 2022 Academy class, 89 became officers for Phoenix Police, 7 left to become detention officers, 2 to become 911 operators, and 2 to work as crime scene specialists, and 1 to work as a police assistant. 2 others eventually returned to a new academy class. The mission for my team is to go forth and continue to encourage them. If at some point they want to return to the role of police recruit, that they are able to do so much more efficiently and quickly, being that we're able to retain them within our department, Zhao said. Stating, we're proud of the advancements we made in 2024. We have seen our applicants' rates skyrocket at the end of the year. We have seen a stabilization and steady rise in our academy class sizes. And most importantly, based on current projections, if our academy classes continue to rise, our total sworn population should see positive growth to 2027 going forward. Zhao said Phoenix Police and Phoenix Fire will be trying to integrate their recruitment efforts and said an upcoming public safety job fair will be included in a community event to generate interest among Phoenix residents in positions with both departments. But Vice Mayor Ann O'Brien said she still found the current number of officer positions incredibly troublesome, and bemoaned Zhao's forecast that it will take until December of 2027 for the department to have 2,602 sworn positions and the absence of reliable data on how many current officers will be leaving by then. We believe we'll be at 2,603 when we don't have the data that says we're retaining folks, O'Brien said. How will we be answering the calls from everyday citizens when our numbers are not going the right direction, she asked. That was, Phoenix Police are short over 600 officers. Our next article, Wood Carvers Practice a Dying Art, by Srianthi Pereira. Wood carving as a hobby or profession is whittling down in this day and age, but long-standing proponents of the craft remain enthusiastic and willing to promote it. Each winter, a large showcase and competition takes place in the valley that gathers the Arizona community of artists and suppliers and invites visitors. This year, the 35th annual Desert Wood Carving Show and Sale will be held on February 22nd and 23rd at Mesa Centennial Hall, where about 100 carvers will display more than 300 intricate carvings. It's a great, great hobby, and I really enjoy the relaxation and then interacting with the other wood carvers. You've got a lot of good people that are willing to teach you how to get better, you know? You can learn from them, said Bobby Gray, president of the Scottsdale-based Grand Canyon State Woodcarvers and chairman of the show. Gray became interested in wood carving 21 years ago when he watched others carve. His mentor invited him to a club meeting and he was hooked. After retiring from a 36-year career in a package delivery service, carving became a serious pastime. "The more that you carve, the better you get," said Gray, whose work Buffalo Soldier won the Best of Show at last year's event in Mesa. Gray is a member of the two main clubs in the Valley. The other, Tempe-based Arizona Woodcarvers Association, is headed by Mark Mosher. Gray carves with others during club meetings and sometimes at home. Club meetings double up as carving sessions. "Some people go there to carve, but then some people go there to talk and socialize," he said. "I like carving around the other carvers and interacting socially. I get more out of it." David Rushlow, 91, of Tempe, is another dedicated woodworker and carver for at least 45 years. After retiring from his job as a telecommunications company, he took it up full-time. Friendship Village, where he resides, provides a space for woodworking, and he is often joined by others for regular carving sessions. He calls it an excellent hobby. "If you're doing things that have a lot of detail and stuff, that takes your mind off completely what's going on around you and in the world, because you have to concentrate on doing the detail on the project and not mess up," he said. Rushlow, who has spent 23 years traveling the country teaching classes in wood carving, is only too happy to teach others. At the time, he made a living from it as well, but now it's minimal income. Rushlow carves portraits of cowboys, American Indian chiefs, saddle makers, golfers, and other lifestyles, Christmas-themed items, and animals such as bison, bears, and deer. The predominant medium is basswood, while butternut wood is also a popular choice. Carvers start with a block of a certain size, depending on the project, and do either a relief carving or a cutout structure. Once the basic piece is ready, carving begins. "You can spend 40, 50, 60 hours or more on a subject. It depends on how big it is and how fast a carver you are," Rushlow said. "Wood and tools are necessary, so are patience, time, and perseverance. Patience is important because mistakes can happen and the wood may need to be discarded midway. Certain people will come and ask you for a critique of a carving, but there's certain people that don't want a critique," Rushlow said. "And the only way that you're going to get better in this game is that you need to have somebody critique that carving, and you need to practice. You need to carve a few days a week. If you only do it once every 2 weeks or month or so, it's like starting all over, because you've got to get used to the tools. You've got to get used to the wood. You've got to understand that the wood slices one way and it rips and tears the other way because of the way the grain lays in it. It's just something that people don't understand. In a technologically changing world, wood carving has been left behind," Gray said. Club membership is dwindling. Grand Canyon Wood Carvers had about 300 members in the 1970s and now has about 50. "There used to be shows in Yuma and Tucson, as well as television shows and out-of-state magazines on the topic. I have not, probably in the last 15, 20 years, had a call from anybody to do an article for a magazine," he said. "It's really sad." That was Wood Carvers Practice a Dying Art. And finally, Remembering Tempe Elementary School District's First Black Teacher, by Eleni Dow. To leave a lasting legacy is something many dream of doing. For Evelyn Palantis, she didn't have to look further than within her own family. Plastered on a middle school building, the name Geneva Epps Mosley was sprawled across. She saw her mother's legacy being remembered in the community. "Every time I see it, it's unbelievable," Plantia said while looking up at Geneva Epps Mosley Middle School in Tempe. Mosley was the Tempe Elementary School District's first black teacher. She was a kindergarten teacher at Frank Elementary for 11 years and then spent 18 years at Gillian Middle School. After nearly 30 years of being a classroom teacher, she started substituting until she was 80. Plantia said her mother graduated in 1959 and then eventually got her master's degree as well. That in itself was astonishing considering where she came from, you know? She worked hard, worked in the cotton fields when she was going to school, Plantia said, adding that her mother worked several jobs. Gillian Middle School was renamed to Geneva Epps Mosley Middle just a few years ago, after information came to light that some Tempe schools and streets were named after people with ties to the Ku Klux Klan. My mom did not let limitations interfere with her being able to do her extraordinary work. She had a motto that she lived by. She said, "The world owes you nothing but an opportunity," Plantia said. Mosley certainly created her own opportunities, her daughter said. Those opportunities led her to help many others over the years. She didn't like anything that would hold anyone back, and so that's why it was important for her to educate kids so that they would have an opportunity to move forward, if that's what they desire. And that was for everyone, Plantia said. For Burdetta Hodge, who is now a Tempe City Council member, Mosley was her second black teacher growing up. She remembers Mrs. Mosley loving the color red and would be honest with her students. "Having her in my life, like I actually had a hero that kind of looked like me, just seeing them in that light made me realize that there's more I can do with mine. Just her believing in me, you know? At that age in middle school, just followed me through life," Hodge said. Mosley died in December at the age of 95. Her legacy will continue through her own children and the hundreds of students that she taught over the years. "Anything that I do from now on, her fingerprints are on it," Hodge said. Her name is also forever memorialized and remembered as part of the middle school in Tempe. Hearing about her legacy, just realizing right now the impact that she has had on Tempe, it's really encouraging. It leaves you with a profound feeling of respect for what she did, Plantia said. "Through her unyielding passion and dedication as a longtime educator, we remain inspired by Mrs. Mosley. We are proud to carry her name on our school building and carry forward her belief that all students are capable of reaching their dreams," Tempe Elementary School District Superintendent Dr. James Driscoll said in a tribute to Mosley. That was Remembering Tempe Elementary District's First Black Teacher. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.